Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what
you need to know. Fourth quarter begins right now here in the program. Finishing strong here on a Wednesday. What you need to know is brought to you by Jungle Law. Experiencing a rumble in the legal jungle? Call the lawman at Jungle Law. If you have a criminal charge pending, call him right away. Jungle Law also handles employment-related issues, even against corporations. Call Jungle Law for a free consultation, 833-4-JUNGLE. That's 833-4-JUNGLE. You can find him online at junglelaw.com. And we start with the Kansas City Royals. They lose today 4-0, swept at the hands of the Twins. Daniel Lynch allowed 4 runs, 3 earned over 6 innings. That's not a 450. I said that's a 450 earlier, didn't I? That's a 6.
Yeah.
So he raised his ERA to 453. I don't know what I was thinking there.
Yeah, it was 4. I checked.
Why didn't you say something like you're an idiot?
I didn't notice it at first.
Okay. Okay. That's a 6 ERA, by the way. Yeah. Yeah. And his ERA now at 453. Walked 1, struck out 2. Royals go to Tampa tomorrow. No starter has been announced because the word came down today that Brad Keller will no longer be in the Royals' rotation. A move that I think needed to be made, as I've made clear a couple of times. But I think Brad Keller's going to be really good in the bullpen, and I think they need help in the bullpen. And so I don't think this will be a horrible thing for the organization.
And though no starter has been announced and no real reputable news outlet has reported this, although a couple things leaking out, there's some thought on David Leske putting out some speculation. Max Castillo might be the guy tomorrow. Maybe called up to be the starter for the Royals tomorrow in Tampa.
I want to bring up this because I'm going to leave it. I'm going to get the kicker. Well, okay. I'm going to save that for the kicker. We'll do the NFL nugget for the kicker. Let's hear from Chiefs camp today as they were back at it. One more day tomorrow, last day up in St. Joe. Today, L'Jarius Sneed at the mic talking about some of the young guys. Said he likes what he's seen from Trent McDuffie and Joshua Williams.
I see that they're hungry, man. Like, they want to be successful. I call Trent like the little Steph Curry. Like, he's a little swift little guy. You know, he can do it all from the inside, from the outside. But I see all of them got potential, though. I can tell, man, from the OTAs, you know, I can tell that they was ready to go when they first came in. You know, I can tell that they learning a lot and they taking everything in as a young player and soaking it in.
What have you learned from them so far? What has he kind of taken
under his wing? Well, Josh, man, I try to steal some things from him as in using his hands. You know, he's very good with his hands and he's very patient at the line. You know, I learned from him as a rookie and I'm still learning myself.
How about that, L'Jarius Sneed going into his third year in the league, talking about learning from a rookie from Fayetteville State.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the compliment given there to Joshua Williams. He was asked a little bit later on about Sneed, saying that he's learned from Williams.
Well, first off, you know, that's a blessing for LJ to say that because, you know, I look up to LJ. That's somebody, that's a vet that I really do try to model myself after and take little things after. And he'll tell, well, I don't know, he's a real humble dude, so he might not tell you. Almost any time I'm coming off the field, I'm asking him, you know, how I can do this, what did he do right here, and he'll give it to you. You know, he's not one of those people who's kind of just in his own world. He'll come and offer some of that wisdom, and at the same time, him being humble, knowing how to speak to the rookie so we understand it, that's just, you know, that's a plus. I love him.
That's a pretty cool room there with the defensive backs.
Very much so. Very young, but there's a lot of ceiling with that group.
Harrison Butker talking today, Chiefs kicker. He was asked what changes he's made.
So some of the top guys, you know, let's just say Justin Tucker, if you watch his film, his ball rotation, you see the laces are pretty much in the middle the entire time. If you watch me or some other maybe inefficient kickers, if you're looking at the ball rotation, the laces are way left, way right. The ball's not going completely end over end. So if I put the same amount of energy into a kick and the ball's going end over end versus a lot of same amount of energy into another kick where I maybe have my toe forward, it's not a completely flush kick. You know, I want my foot to be perpendicular with the ball. If it's not perpendicular with the ball's not going to be going end over end, and so it's just not going to go as far, right? So that's kind of what I mean is being efficient. One way you achieve that is having your foot perpendicular to the ball, and then after contact is your foot following the ball. And I think I have an issue of my foot makes contact with the ball, and then very early on my foot's going off left. So I'm losing all this energy, whereas now I feel like my foot is following the ball for a lot longer. I'm getting nice rotation. I think I'm getting more energy behind that kick.
Did you know kicking
nth
was
degree.
That
no.
complicated? Tell you what, if Harrison
Well, I know
Bucker,
it's not easy, because
yeah,
I've
right.
tried to kick a ball, and it is pathetic.
But it goes beyond just having the natural ability to do that. I mean, if Harrison Bucker doesn't succeed, it won't be because he hadn't put his mind to it.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was amazing.
Yeah.
My initial thought was, how does a guy this long in the league not know that already? But then now I'm kind of like, it's kind of nice. You talk about a lot. It shows confidence when a guy's willing to admit that there's still things for him to learn.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. My initial thought was, shut up, nerd.
Take your protractor and your taped glasses. And
no, I thought it was cool to hear him break down the minutia of it and how he's trying to get everything out of it, because he's really, really good.
Yes, I mean,
he's really good. And I'm annoyed because Adam Hill, who covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, will not trade him to me in our Dynasty League.
He knows.
I'm offering him two kickers for one. I'm like, listen, I'm doing you a favor. You only have one kicker. It's Bucker. So you need another kicker for the bye week. I'm doing this as a favor just because I want a Chief on my roster. So make this deal. I don't know. I don't know what you're getting at. I'm going to punch him when I get to Vegas. That's happening. I will tell everybody about all his snitches, too, at the end, and it will piss him off. And I will have a good day because of it. Eric Bieniemy talking at the podium about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I thought this was interesting. Said, even in year three, still growing as an NFL player.
Clyde has done a heck of a job. And the thing that my challenge has been for him is to, I know this sounds crazy, but just to get his win right, okay? To make sure that his endurance is right. To be able to play 7, 8, 9, 10 plays in a row. And so it's been impressive watching him work and challenging himself. And I've seen growth in that area. And the thing about it, I love the way he's functioning when he's, quote unquote, supposed to be tired. And that's the thing that he's growing with in this process, because now he's learning what it takes to become a professional football player. All right. You're not going to always feel at your best. But when we call upon you in that time, can you react? All right. And play just like you would have if it would have been the first play.
I don't think he meant it this way, but you could take that to mean that he's either saying he's poorly conditioned or not tough.
Yeah.
You know?
That when they've needed, when he, you know, late in the game or when he's tired, not quite feeling 100%, you gotta push through. And
you're saying he hasn't been there in those situations previously.
That's what I heard.
I don't think that's what he meant. I'm not gonna make a huge deal out of it. I guess, like, hey, you got, like, it's hard to run the football, and I don't know. I just that one jumped at us. Mm-hmm. We're like, really kind of questioning the guy's mettle. Is that what's going on here?
And that's something that Eric Bieniemy just doesn't do.
No. All right, we will take a break. We're going to talk some NFL football. Mike Sando, senior NFL writer for The Athletic, joins us next here in the program.
Radio 810 WHB talking NFL football with our NFL insider, Mike Sando from The Athletic, senior NFL writer. He's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. If you go to twinpeaksrestaurant.com/fantasy draft, you will see what Twin Peaks can do for you. The fantasy leagues are up and running. Everybody's getting their draft done. Nobody handles your draft better than the folks at Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views. Of course, you get a $50 gift card if you're the commish for setting up your draft there. So think about that. A lot of eats, a lot of drinks for you. And, of course, everybody in your draft gets a $5 gift card. 29-degree man-sized draft beers. Yep, you can get them. Cool yourself off. If you don't get your guy with a 29-degree man-sized draft beer at Twin Peaks, twinpeaksrestaurant.com/fantasy draft. Let's welcome Mike Sando to the program. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good to be here again.
Yeah, and great to have some actual football to talk about. We've got games, so we'll get to some of the performances that we've seen so far. But first, let's go back. We've talked about it. You were the guy who spawned the quarterback tiers, and everybody waits. I know I do, waiting for the quarterback tiers to come out. And when we don't have games, things like this, rankings and opinions, get a lot of fodder, and yours always does, whether it's people reacting, not liking where they are, or some of the comments. You talk to 50 people in the league, execs, coaches, guys that know what they're talking about, and you know, were you surprised with any of the reactions you got, like the one about Patrick Mahomes? Let's start with him since he's our guy here in Kansas City.
Absolutely. You know, you get, when you do a project like this, everything, all the conversations you have feels so normalized to you, right? Because you're in the middle of it. And so then you publish it and people are seeing, getting into these conversations for the first time. And sometimes it strikes them totally differently. Yeah. Or you don't know what people are going to latch onto. But then after it runs, you go, oh, I should have known people would have, you know, we're going to react to that. It seems obvious then. So that happens all the time. On this one, you know, so for Patrick Mahomes, one of the criticisms was that, hey, you take away his first read, it's the Vulcan street ball. And then what happens is somebody pulls that out. There's much more than that in the piece, but someone pulls that out and asks for Patrick Mahomes, and suddenly there's a story, right? Oh, my gosh, it's street ball, this or that. I think, you know, for everyone in the league, I think agrees that, number one, Andy Reid's probably the best in the league at training quarterbacks, and that Mahomes is a very well-trained quarterback. They're really good, especially before the snap. I think that's an interesting thing. I was actually talking to someone at a camp this year about that, that Mahomes is great there. Now, after the snap, he's really good too. But I think some people have in their mind a couple things. One, when they lost that Super Bowl, I think Tampa Bay did a great job of forcing him to go to his left and making the game harder for him. And so that was one example of somebody being able to kind of solve what they were able to do. And then I think to the street ball thing, Mahomes and I think Andy Reid quarterbacks in general are really great, like I said, before the snap, of identifying what they're going to do. And they know quickly what they're going to do. But sometimes the play, it was put to me this way by a defensive coach, the play can either be very long or very short. And so when it's very short, it means he figured it out right away what was going to happen on this play, what his options were, and he executed the offense quickly, perfectly. In the absence of that, sometimes it does turn into a very long play. And that can be Patrick Mahomes at his best. One of the 50 people I talked to said, hey, it got a little ragtag at times and didn't look as easy last season. And so he made him a two. I think it was an outlier view, but I like to put the outlier views in there. I mean, hey, if you're going to have one person out of 50 put Patrick Mahomes here too, I want to hear what they got to say, whether I agree or not.
Yeah.
So, I think there's an element of truth to it, but it's not defining.
Yeah. And I agree. And, you know, I think for me, first of all, let me read the whole paragraph there. It's not long, so people can put it in the context of what's written. It says, we love Mahomes because of his unorthodox throws, not because of his natural pocket presence, the voter said. And when that disappears, that is when they lose games. I don't think that is a one. I think that is a two. Nothing against the guy. I love the kid, but take his first read away, and what does he do? He runs, he scrambles, and he plays street ball, which, by the way, I would have loved to have had that discussion, because I would have said, well, is he effective at street ball? Is the street ball coach, and I'm sure you probably did go deeper on it, right? But the piece is not, you know, 20,000 words on Patrick Mahomes, as much as Chiefs fans would like it all to be about Mahomes. It's about all the quarterbacks. So there's a limit of what you can put in there. But, you know, I think that's fair, right? I think people bristle at the term street ball. I take it as I actually take it as a compliment as a Chiefs fan, as somebody who watches quarterbacks, thinks he knows a little bit about what they do, because I consider him like the point guard that has run the play, has run the set. It's gone to crap. It didn't work. And me as a coach, there's 5 seconds on the shot clock. Yeah. And he went between his legs twice, behind his back, knifed in, and pulled up for a 17-foot fall away and knocked down a two. We scored. You know, that's the beauty of Patrick Mahomes is if your play sucks, he can still have a successful play for you. If your play's right and he makes a mistake or somebody else makes a mistake, he can still go to that level where he just does it on raw talent. I'm curious, was that meant more of a compliment than maybe people are taking it as?
No, I think it's a term, you know, in retrospect, I think it's a term no one who coaches or plays the position wants to have put on them, because it makes it sound like you're freelancing or, you know, not as on point. So, you know, when you are talking about somebody who's great, the standards for criticism are different, right? And we're comparing them to, like, the greatest of all time. It's not like we're comparing them to Kirk Cousins saying, yeah, you know, Mahomes is lacking this area. So I think that's the thing that I would keep in mind on the criticisms. We're talking about, you know, finding the smallest speck of dust on the glittering Ferrari, right? And most people just look at the Ferrari and go, oh, man, that's the most beautiful machine I've ever seen. Of course I'd like to have that. But when we're putting them all in the showroom and comparing three Ferraris, you go, somebody might say, yeah, you know, I don't like the trim on the dash on this one as much. And that's all it is for me.
And so I would say I'll take the kid, like I said, because I think he'll bail me out and get first downs off creativity. Yeah. And he freely admits, and I think every quarterback says, hey, there's still more they can learn. He's probably getting to the end where he's not taking 10, 20% jumps in the offseason or even five. It's 1 or 2% now at this point. He's probably 92, 3, 4, 5% of whatever his best day is going to be. There's probably a little bit more room for growth, but I like the way you put it. Dust on a Ferrari, picking nits. We're talking about finding the best of that. He's number two, for God's sake, people. Settle down. I
kind of like that too. I felt like having Rodgers be a 1.0 and having Mahomes be a 1.02 was a perfect tiny bit of separation, because I thought Rodgers probably was just a hair better than everybody last year, you know? So it came out good to me.
Yeah, I agree. And let me tell you something else. I know Patrick Mahomes gets motivated by these things. He can say he doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
At a podium. But when he was voted fourth best amongst the players' rankings, and Lamar Jackson was voted number one in 2019, and he played the Ravens, scored a touchdown, and came over and very distinctly counted 1, 2, 3, 4 with his fingers and made it clear, like, I'm number four. When he played against the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky on a Sunday night or Monday night, and he threw a touchdown, and the Chiefs had taken firm control of the game, and he came over and counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on his fingers to say, I went 10th. This guy went number two. Like, this, I think, is the kind of thing that Patrick Mahomes went, oh, street ball, okay, can't play with it, okay.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be mentioned during the season. I bet you he brings it up,
oh,
like after a game, or will allude to it or something. I love everything about his makeup, you know, that way. I think he's at the perfect, and they have a little scrutiny on this year, right? It wasn't as easy last year. They lose Tyreek Hill. Everyone's going to be watching and looking for specks of dust this year, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be fun.
And if you're Patrick Mahomes, I think you see it as your chance to go out there and really shine and be the, yeah, you know, the guy that, you know, yep, that quiets all. I mean, we've said it. We think he's like Michael Jordan, and he will even make things up in his head where somebody disrespected him,
oh, yeah,
to go out there and drive him. Now he's got a great one. So if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, please send. We'll get a GoFundMe page for Mike Sando. Everybody can send money to thank him for fueling the fire of Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson was the other one that we got some blowback from. If he has to pass to win the game, they ain't winning the game. Another DC said, he's so unique as an athlete. He's a really good football player, but I don't care if he wins the league MVP 12 times. I don't think he'll ever be a one as a quarterback. He'll be a one as a football player, but not as a quarterback. That got a lot of blowback. I won't say he'll never, but I would say right now, I agree with that assessment. Maybe his passing skills will get better, but I don't think he can win three and what in most years is most likely four playoff games by predominantly, you know, either running or all of his passing being set up by the run. I think that's actually a fair statement of his skills.
I think it is too. I think the debate here is, hey, do we need to redefine what tier one is? Because tier one includes some of the things that Lamar Jackson brings, which, I mean, he's a number one primary game plan consideration for every team he plays, and he carries their offense. There's no question he does that. But there is also a component of tier one that says you have to expertly handle pure passing situations. So what that means is basically, hey, there's going to be times, you know, like you're alluding to in the playoffs, a lot of times or critical moments when, look, it's on you and your arm, and we don't have the play action pass game or run. We don't have the run game. We're not, you know, the defense makes you play left-handed, takes away your run because they had an extra week of game planning, or you're getting their best playoff game plan. And I think once that Lamar Jackson overcomes that better, then I think he'll get more of a boost into tier one. And in the meantime, that person I spoke to said, look, I don't care how many MVPs you win, until you can do that part of it better, you know, tough, you're not going to be in my tier one. But other people put him in tier one. I think eight people put him in tier one. I think eight put him in tier three. So the passing's so limited that really, you know, there's an element in, of people in the league, including defensive players and especially defensive secondary people, who just aren't going to respect you fully unless you can really sling that football and throw it when you have to throw it. So that's a little bit of the debate on him. And I think that, you know, that part of it that was seized out of it. Hey, I don't care if he wins 12 MVPs, not tier one. That was actually put out there on social media, not by me. I think it was ESPN by itself. And I think anyone who read that by itself would say, well, what are you talking about? That seems unreasonable. But when you read the piece, you go, oh, I see the context. Yeah, I agree to disagree, but not that far off.
Yeah, and I think the important, you know, the people that really have got to figure out that statement and where it's right or wrong are the Baltimore Ravens. They're the ones that now have an ultimatum, get a deal done by week one, or he's shutting down negotiations. I have not wavered from what I said the first year I remember being on in Baltimore. I think maybe I even told you this, but I was on with Glenn Clark, and you know, he was saying, hey, what do you think of our guy? We're hoping we've got our Patrick Mahomes. I said, I think he's dynamic. I think, you know, he's a change up to the drop back quarterbacks and everything. I mean, I think I said, if the plan, I said, unless his passing really develops, if the plan is to be different and do a run based offense and play action off that, I think it's a great plan. Run him. When it comes time to pay him, trade him and move on down the road. And hopefully by then you found another quarterback prospect, because I think he'll be beat up. You know, that's easy to say 5 years out. It's easy to say when you don't have to make the decision. The Baltimore Ravens have to make that decision. Like, do you think that his deal gets done? Do you think he's going to get top of the quarterback food chain money?
I'm not going to overthink it too much. It doesn't seem like he's that eager to get a deal to me. And we've seen their ownership and front office even make some public comments. Hey, we'll do it when Lamar's ready. I don't think they would just be saying that if he was clamoring for a deal, right? That would be a hard thing saying to you about your quarterback if it weren't true. So it looks to me like he's willing to bet on himself to try to get the maximum deal, which, by the way, Joe Flacco did successfully. I don't think Joe Flacco is as good as Lamar Jackson, but he had a hot playoff run. We saw in the past, even after Dak Prescott got badly injured, he got paid at or near the top of the market. So the key for Jackson to me is that he's going to make $23 million fully guaranteed this season, regardless, as part of the fifth-year option. And so that gives him a wonderful security blanket to roll the dice, right? If you look back a few years to players that were just taken a few spots later in the second round, Andy Dalton and Colin Kaepernick had you know, varying degrees of success, weren't MVPs, but good quarterback. They were not making $23 million in their last year of their rookie deal. They were hardly making anything by NFL standards, and they felt compelled to take compromise deals just to get some security. I think Lamar Jackson with $23 million, whatever he makes off the field in endorsements, is probably good. He's probably making an interesting gamble with a lot of upside for himself.
Does, I mean, he's the prime candidate to go Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, right? And say, listen, I'll $35 million a year, if that's what you're going to do and pay me along the way, that's fine. You can only slap the franchise tag on me twice, and then I get to free agency. I mean, you know, I would never recommend somebody not have an agent. I think it is a titanic distraction for numerous reasons that at least on this program we've said a lot that we don't need to cover right here. But, you know, I don't think if the – you know, security blanket is he gets just $23 million this year and his career ends, which, you know, how often does a career actually end, right? We saw Dak Prescott face what was probably the worst scenario you could see, where he gets hurt with the ankle and he still got paid. So,
what I'm really interested to see, you know, him athletically, I do know people in the league who evaluate quarterbacks who feel like he could be a better passer, that he doesn't have like a physical limitation with his arm, right? That he has a pretty loose arm, and the type of arm that can make a lot of good throws on different platforms and that sort of thing. They have leaned in heavily to the type of offense that really exploits his ability to run. What will happen if they sort of hit the end of the road and peaked a little bit as a team? Do they, or does another team, try to put him in a little bit of a different offense, right? and try to maximize that part? Or are you so far down this road with him that it's almost too late, and that you just have to keep trying to maximize that component of his game at the expense of just a little bit more of a traditional passing attack, which actually might be needed to get him over the top? The second corollary to that is, I do think he'd win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson. I mean, we've seen teams with much lesser quarterbacks, including the Ravens, with Flacco and Trent Dilfer twice. As long as they had an amazing defense, special teams, they were able to win it all. It's hard to win it all, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, right? It's hard, even if you can't do those things. So I think it's an interesting sort of internal debate conundrum, because you can get a lot worse than Lamar Jackson overnight. It's hard to get better than Lamar Jackson, right?
Yeah.
That's why he was 10th in this thing overall, coming off of a not great year for him. So a very interesting situation, but you're right. It's easy 5 years out or for us to say what you're going to do. But when you know what that player means in your locker room and what, how respected he is as a leader and how he goes about his business, it's a lot harder to say, we'll just trade him.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think both Ravens Super Bowl championship teams would have taken Lamar Jackson over the guys they had. You definitely can win with him. It does get harder if $45 million, rough 22% of your salary cap is being taken up by him. Then you have to really thread a needle, which, they're one of the best teams at doing that when it comes to the talent that they put around him. We're talking to Mike Sando here in the program, a senior NFL writer for The Athletic. Aaron Rodgers is kind of barking about drops. Are we finally starting to feel his frustration of losing Davante Adams? And do we think that it's really going to cost the Packers this year?
I do believe that even the great quarterback needs a baseline level of support and weaponry to succeed. And I think, the Chiefs are losing Tyreek Hill, but they have Travis Kelce. They have a lot of other guys. I think they're going to be okay. But, I did do a research piece a couple of years ago. Remember a couple of years ago when Rodgers' stats were down for a couple of years? Mm-hmm. He even got a few tier two votes, but something wasn't right. They ended up firing McCarthy, and everyone lived happily ever after that in Green Bay. But I did a research study with some coaches at that time where we compared Rodgers' 2019 season, where his stats weren't as good and the weaponry wasn't as good, to his 2014 MVP season. And what we looked for specifically was missed opportunities. It doesn't mean we're not just talking about drops. We're talking about plays that good receivers would normally make or should make. And it was unbelievable how many yards the 2019 Packers left out there. The number of missed chances just for 15 plus yard gains went from 18 during his MVP season to 34 in 2019. They left an additional 500 yards, easy yards, and 7 touchdowns on the field with plays that the receivers had been making that weren't. So I do think Rodgers is better suited than almost anybody to overcome, but there has to be some effect. And I think the question I have about them is, does the maybe improved structure of their offense with Matt LaFleur help him? Because they do a good job of running the ball. They do a good job with the play action. They have good running backs. Is that enough for Rodgers to basically look fairly the same? They're definitely going to miss he and Adams barely make eye contact and know exactly what they're going to do in a critical situation. That can't be replicated. But is there just enough in the structure of the offense with the play action and all of that we're not going to really notice? I think that's the big test for LaFleur.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to get your thoughts on some guys that you've seen up close. People don't know Mike Sando's based up in Seattle. Carlos Dunlap is coming to the Chiefs. They're certainly trying to increase their production in the sack game. I think they were down to 30 sacks last year, 31 the year before, 42 the year before that, 51 the year before that. So it's been a steady decrease in sacks. You saw Dunlap up close. So what do you think the Chiefs got in him, and how much is left in the tank at 33?
I kind of like him as a complimentary guy, right? You can't hang your hat on him and expect him. He's not going to go out and get 10 sacks. But I felt watching Seattle last year, there was a stretch there, maybe, you know, week, I'm going to say 11, 12, 13 in there, where they weren't playing him at all. I was like, kind of what happened? And then they put him back in there, and he had a couple of really good games. I want to say against the Rams. Maybe they played a game against the Bears. Odd that he looked really good. So I think there's flashes there. And my hope would be, in a much better situation with, let's say, Mahomes scoring some points, right, and maybe having some situations that where you can close out games, that could be very different and advantageous to him relative to Seattle, where Russell Wilson was injured, not playing as well. They're going with Geno Smith. They're trying to win the game 20-17. I think if you get him in a exciting environment where he doesn't have to be the guy and can be a guy, I think he can give you something situationally. I don't think he fixes anything by himself.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to put it. And I think they're counting on Karlaftis, a slimmed down Frank Clark, to be a better version of himself. I think, you know, they're looking at the sum of the whole, the sum of the parts to be greater, right? To have all the individuals make it better. And I think that's, you know, I think that's the only way you can go about do it when you're picking at the bottom. As we talked several weeks ago, you know, picks 25 to 32 usually don't get the fifth year option, right? So when you're picking in that range, if you get a guy that you give a fifth year option to, you've accomplished something as far as your scouting skills and your development skills within your organization. The math says Karlaftis is not going to be a great difference maker, but if he can just be a good player and give them depth, I do think, you know, the Chiefs defense looks deeper, right? And their defensive line, they've added Danny Shelton as well. They look deeper. And I think that's what they're counting on, that as everybody loses guys along the way, the guys that actually show up in December and January and hopefully February for this team, I will still be at a higher level. When everybody's down two or three guys, they'll look a lot better. I think that's the plan with what they've tried to accomplish. It's hard. You know, finding Khalil Mack isn't easy.
Well, they also play the NFL's hardest schedule of opposing quarterbacks. I talked to the 50 coaches and execs, and we got basically an average tier ranking for every quarterback in the league, 1.0 to Rodgers, down to whatever, you know, Smith 4-point-something, right? The worst. I plugged all of those into the schedule, and then I suspended Watson for at least the first six games. The Chiefs had the toughest schedule in the league of opposing quarterbacks. They don't have to play Mahomes, but I think they did draw Rodgers, Brady, right, in the scheduling rotation.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, on top of the rest of the West. So I think that is something you really have to keep in mind. For them, I think their average quarterback, the average opposing quarterback was like a 2.28 tier. If you're in the top, that's top two tiers. And if you're in the top two tiers, I feel like your team can win a championship with you. And I feel like your team wants to pay you and keep you. If you're in tier three or below, if you're in tier three, like, they could keep you or they could move on from you, Jimmy G, right? That type of thing. So they're playing, their average opposing quarterback is somebody there. The opposing team wants to build around, and that's harder than the rest of the league.
Go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm sorry, Mike.
That said, I do like some of the moves that they made. They really have done a good job, I think, identifying this is our problem area and fixing it. Remember, it was the offensive line 1 year, and I think this year clearly, you know, defense is a big part of that. And I do a podcast every week during the season with Randy Mueller, 35-year executive in the league, who's a 3-time GM, and I really respect him as an evaluator. I just thought it was very interesting to me before the draft. He had McDuffie as his number one corner in the draft. For whatever that's worth, when the Chiefs picked him, I thought, okay, all right, that was somebody, you know, that he really liked.
Yeah, and there's no doubt the Chiefs really liked him because they bounced up to get him. They thought, and there were a lot of corners that were available in their spot had they stayed put. If they thought they were all the same, they could have stayed put or even tried to roll back and gotten a similar guy. They thought he was a difference maker, and so that's what they're expecting him to be, is that kind of guy that can come in and make a difference. And, you know, we'll see. If the longer you can cover, the more time you got to get there. One more thing I want to ask you about Derwin James real quick. What's your reaction to his contract? The Chargers already. And I assume his contract is going to actually help them cap-wise next year. But on next year's cap, they're already at $237 million. Do you like this deal?
I love Derwin James, and I feel like they probably had to do the deal. The structure of it, the details, we don't know. All we know on day one is, oh, my gosh, it's the biggest this, the record that. I mean, we all know what that is, right? I mean, that's what they say about all the contracts on day one. It's a prerequisite to being able to report about the deal first, right? So I think here's the key. What type of deal does Justin Herbert eventually do? Because I think there's a couple different types of veteran quarterback deals, top-tier quarterback deals. Mahomes, Josh Allen, they sort of get the team needs to, right? They know they're going to get paid and be on their wildest dreams, and they're winning the lottery to even have these, to be in this role. They took long-term deals that the team can plan around and structure around, right? And move money around and have a way to try to make this work. I think there's been some other deals like Drew Brees, even Aaron Rodgers' latest deal. I think Russell Wilson did short-term deals that do pinch you on the cap and make for some short-term issues. So I think they're in a good spot right now with a great quarterback. I think Justin Herbert is great. I think they're bad on defense and special teams. That's why he's 15 and 17 as a starter. They've got to do what they can to at least get middle of the pack, top 12 on defense. And this is part of that. They can worry about the other stuff long term later. And usually there's an out with a guy like the Derwin James contract. If they can probably get out of it after 2 or 3 years. If they have to do that, they probably can. Then they'll be paying Herbert, and they can do what the Chiefs did, have a really small cap number in the beginning, right? So I don't think I would be surprised if this deal kills them. And shoot, by the time I do Herbert, Khalil Mack could be out of there too, right? So you know, they're making some shorter term plays that are by definition riskier, but are also kind of things we've hoped the Chargers would have done at times in the past to help Phillip Rivers, right? To get over the top. They haven't been a team to spend. And so, you know, you can say Khalil Mack's got a bad foot and might only play 8 games. You might be right. But I feel like, hey, at least they're recognizing that they're in this window and they're trying something.
No doubt. No doubt. Time for our final four with Mike Sando. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have a strain, sprain, fracture, University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care. That's right. Walk right in at 435 and all in Overland Park. They're open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Four quickies. Just tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Does Tom Brady finish the season?
Does he finish this season? Yeah. What do you mean?
When you take a break, you leave the team.
Yeah.
I think it opens it up.
I guess nothing would surprise you with Brady, but I mean, I think he's in for this season. And then the question becomes, what's after that, right? And this Miami stuff, maybe got blown out of the water and can't be done, but there were certainly some things going on there. I don't know what the heck's going on, you know, with him missing the camp for this or that, but I bet you he plays the whole season.
Okay. Does Aaron Rodgers win another Super Bowl?
The odds are no, but I really like their team this year. I think that his contract really hurts them over the next 2 to 3 years. I think they've got a young defense. I think the special teams coach helps them. I think they're my favorite to get to the Super Bowl of any team in the league because they're in the NFC. If they're in the AFC, shoot, forget about it, right? Everyone's
right.
It's a shark tank. But I really like them. I think that they're going to be in the Super Bowl this year, and then we'll see if they win it.
Okay. Did you watch the finale of Better Call Saul?
I did. I watched all the Breaking Bads and Better Call Saul, and I liked the end.
Okay. Very good. And finally, the first head coach fired will be who? The odds have been out there. The favorite is Matt Rhule, followed by Mike McCarthy, Pete Carroll, Frank Reich, Ron Rivera, Kevin Stefanski. If I need to go further, I can. Dan Campbell's right there as well. Those are the top.
No, Rhule by far. I mean, Pete Carroll's not getting fired this year. I mean, people don't understand that situation. That would just shock me. And they've made a 2-year commitment at least to rebuild, and Pete Carroll's got a lot of equity built up there. So I would say Rhule for sure, just by the nature of the situation, where he's at, the owner, I think, there too. You know, I don't know if we know enough about him to feel what we do know feels like there's always something moving under the water there, right? It may be a little placid under top, but I feel like there's undercurrents there.
Yeah. 3-1 are the odds on Rule. I don't know that I could bet on a guy losing his job just because what I'm rooting for. I don't think I can.
I don't like it either.
Yeah. I don't like it either. But if I were Ron Rivera at 8-1 and the mess that is the Washington football team is where I would put my money.
Yeah. But here's the deal on Washington. Like I went and visited their camp, and I mean, I suppose Daniel Snyder could do anything, but I feel like there that Ron Rivera represents probably the best of what they have going on there, even independent of what their team does on the field. Like, they need respected adults there because of the mess of their ownership situation. So is Daniel Snyder, with all the hot water he's kind of in now, going to do something to make Daniel Snyder be the focus? I think as long as someone else is there, they are a little bit more of a focus. But if he fires them, then he becomes the focus again.
Mike, you're the man. Mike Sando from The Athletic. Great stuff. Check out his great work there. We appreciate the time. We'll talk again soon, my friend.
Thank you, Soren.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Brandon Crawford did it last night for the Giants. Who was the last Royal to hit a walk-off home run with KC down to their final out? So that's trailing with two outs. Walk-off homer.
Salvador Perez.
It was actually Eric Hosmer in 2017. That's not what's interesting. What's interesting is it was off Greg Holland, who had come back to play here with the Rockies. And two, they've only had five in their history. Before Eric Hosmer, 2010, Alex Gordon against the Orioles, David DeJesus in 2008 against the Mariners, and Amos Otis twice, 1978 against the Yankees, Rich Gossage, that was the inside the Parker where Paul Blair and Reggie Jackson collided in right field, in 1973 against Milwaukee. So they've done it five times, and two of them were AO.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue gets you some tonight. Joe'sKC.com is how you can put your order in. Send it anywhere in the country. Wonderful Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Number one fries in the city. I believe the number one onion rings in the city. I've never seen that contest, but I believe that they would crush it. Incredible fries, incredible rings. Ribs, most underrated part of their menu. They don't pound the drum for it, but their ribs are incredible. Painstaking efforts they go to. Get you a short end.
Amazing
on your
consistency.
Way home. Yeah, so good. So good. Leave you with this to our friends at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, joeskc.com. I'll leave it this. A late hit on Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey led to yet another scuffle today during a joint practice between the Patriots and the Carolina Panthers. Left a fan injured. McCaffrey, who was out of bounds, was knocked to the ground by Pats D lineman Dietrich Wise, who landed on the fan during the ensuing scrum. McCaffrey responded by spiking the ball at Wise's feet, sparking the fight that carried into the stands. Either one of two things has to happen. Either stop doing these stupid practices or make it that they're subject to fines and penalties.
Yes.
That's why there's all these fights. In games, this doesn't happen because they can lose game checks. Allow them to suspend these guys and lose game checks, and they'll knock it off. As it stands now, you've got guys covered in armor that are feeling their oats and know that there's no ramifications for almost any behavior. Either stop the practices or start fining them.